This is Audible.
I'm Andy McNab, and this is Spoken from the Front. Across the two Gulf Wars, literally thousands of men and women have been kidnapped in Iraq. On average, there are 35 kidnaps a week. The criminal gangs don't care who they take. It makes no difference to them, as long as the hostage can be ransomed for money. That's all what matters. Sometimes the ransom is paid, but more often than not, the ransom money doesn't get paid quickly enough, or things just go wrong. The hostage doesn't get killed, they get sold on to a militant group instead, particularly if the hostage is a Westerner. Unfortunately, the militant groups aren't interested in ransom money. Far more value to them is to have their hostage paraded in front of the cameras, tortured and then executed, all in the name of their cause. Such is the entertainment value of this ordeal, it is possible to buy DVDs of the execution on any Iraqi street market, within hours of the execution taking place. But it isn't just insurgents who use hostage taking as propaganda. The US and UK governments do it too. By condemning the outrage in the media, whether the outcome is good or bad, governments gain support from the British and American people, something they're always looking to do whenever they can. Here are some examples of kidnaps that have gone very wrong. Ken Bigley, a 62-year-old civil engineer from Liverpool, beheaded online with a bread knife. Margaret Hassan, a 59-year-old aid worker who had dedicated her life to helping Iraqis, shot in the head, then the video of her execution was released to the media. There are also, of course, success stories. Norman Kemba, a British peace activist who was rescued by the SAS. Special forces have carried out many successful hostage rescues, and I, for one, am very proud of their skill and bravery. I'm Andy McNab, and this is Spoken from the Front. And the story that follows would no doubt be one of the toughest rescues Special Forces have had to do yet.
We'd crashed out of the green zone 15 minutes earlier on this fastball with fuck all information. Tui was in the front right passenger seat, bent over a small monitor in the footwell. It gave out a gentle glow as he watched the ongoing situation, trying to work out the emergency response plan. A Predator UAV, the world's biggest remote-controlled aeroplane, was orbiting the city 50,000 feet above us, completely out of sight and packed with cameras and Hellfire missiles to fuck up someone's day. It was sending a constant feed of the target from its thermal imaging camera, and that was the only information we had. It was only 35 minutes since the informer had told the Americans where Yankee 1, the hostage, was. Even then, we didn't know exactly where in the city he was being held, only that it was being splashed by Predator. Our job? To follow the splash and get Yankee 1 back as quickly and covertly as possible to the green zone. And this was one job that we could not fail. Why? Because Yankee 1 was otherwise known as HRH Prince Harry. It was 4 days since he'd been lifted while out on patrol with the Blues and Royals. They'd been hit big time with RPGs on the Iraq-Iran border. His crew all killed, him taken hostage. And they'd been big shit on ever since. How the fuck he had got lifted, being the world's most protected squaddie, will no doubt be covered up for years to come. They'd probably do the usual, bin a couple of generals just for show. Always a good thing, if you ask me. It should have been easy to find him, too. Yankee 1 had a tracking device embedded in his skin between the dermis and the epidermis on his shoulder. But they'd dug it out of his arm within hours of him getting lifted. So much for new technology. I drove as fast as I could, speeding up on the straight bits and then braking to avoid the debris that lay everywhere. Bits of wood, burnt out cars, makeshift barricades that militants had put up. There was even a burnt out Humvee that had been RPG'd 2 weeks before, still sitting there. Amongst the mess, I could still see a thin white beam of IR light, marking a spot maybe 2 km away. I kept heading straight for it. The four assault groups all had M4 rifles, with SIGs as secondary weapons. Both strapped to our legs with the two magazines on the opposite leg. We weren't doing this to look wary. It was just that with the new Osprey body armour, it was practically impossible to draw your weapon from your hip because you were dressed up like Robocop. Two massive plates either side of your Kevlar vest and a big Kevlar collar that protected you from up blasts. You even got special bat wings, two huge Kevlar sleeves that came down to your elbow. So we sat back from the monitor. Jacko, how far we got? I checked the beam ahead. About K. So we looked back at Kenny and Dan. Time to turn their shot off. That's Bravo 1 at Green 5. The green spots on the map belong to Sado City, one of the nine districts of Baghdad. It was called Badlands by the Americans. Hundreds of soldiers had been shot, blown up, hit with rockets and firebombed here over these past 4 years. None of us came into this part of town unless we had enough heli and tank support to flatten the whole district if the shit hit the fan. But tonight was different. Dan, Kenny and me had watched the Harry Online video that was released by the militants. He was in shit state. Naked, cut up, big swollen face with half his teeth missing, and a big chunk of flesh gouged out of his left arm where the tracking device had been. Those looks weren't going to get him on the front page of Hello this week, that's for sure. You couldn't really hear what he was saying, but he was talking, and that meant he was breathing. That was the main thing. As for Harry being over here, well, I thought much the same as the rest of the troop. Of course we'd taken a piss out of him about coming over here in his little tank to save us all. But he's a soldier, and soldiers are paid to fight. He should be here, and I'd be pissed off if he wasn't. I didn't give a shit if he was third in line to the throne or an 18-year-old private from a Manchester housing estate. He was one of us. He was here fighting, and now he was in the shit. We'd all watched as Harry refused to denounce the Britain-American presence in Iraq. He then got a rifle butt slammed into his face and disappeared off the screen as he went down screaming. You could see him pushing him into a wooden trunk, jumping on his legs to get all of him inside.
Bet Granny's gonna be pissed off. I hope every man and his fucking dog is out looking for me when I'm lifted. It'll be worth you getting lifted if you get some of that.
Kenny and Dan were both in their late 20s. They were both Scousers, they had the same curly brown hair, and they'd been Scalies, Royal Signals, at the same time. As far as I could tell, the only difference between them was that Kenny had acne scars pitted all over his face. He looked like the surface of the moon. But since he was a big fucker, nobody took the piss. These two were joined at the hip. They'd even married twin sisters in Hereford. Tui got on the net. All call signs, this is Bravo 1. Listen in. Yankee 1 is somewhere in a two-story burned-out building. Can't see any sign of life in or around the target. If we get to it without getting pinged, I want Bravo 2 to make entry on red. I see windows. Acknowledge. Colours give us the sides of the building. White is front, black is back, red is right, and green is on the left-hand side. Bravo 3, make entry on green. You have windows, acknowledge. Roger that. Bravo 4, on black. Secure the outside and the wagons. You have a door there, acknowledge. Roger that. Bravo 1, I'll take white. Remember what we're here for. Yankee 1, I want him in a wagon as soon as... Then once we're all complete, I'll give the word to move. We hadn't a clue what we were up against. The doors or windows could be barricaded or booby-trapped. The militants could be wearing body armour or just string vests. They could be ready for us, or they could be as high as kites on heroin from Iran. Having three assault groups making entry at three different points at least gave us a 1 in 3 chance of actually getting in the building and finding the little fucker. Plus, if we all managed to make entry, we could swamp the place before whoever had lifted Yankee 1 had time to react and kill him. If we get to our entry point, I want... Wait out. I couldn't see what was on the monitor, but the job had gone noisy for sure. They had to know we were coming. Tui gripped my arm, calm and slow as always.
Stop.
Go to white light. Kenny was already out of the wagon ripping off the IR film. The other three wagons were doing the same. We started to light up the whole street. Looking down at the monitor, I could see five solid white bodies moving about on the roof, giving off lots of thermal. One of them was about half the size of the others, maybe a boy. He was following two men who were dragging a large box, and the fuzzy shape giving off heat inside it was easily recognizable as a body. Dan hit my shoulder.
At least we know the twat's there, don't we? I ripped off my NVGs and Tui took them as Kenny shut his door. Let's go. I'll guide. Dan, give a commentary. All call signs, this is Bravo 1. Yankee 1 on the roof in his box. We got 5 x-rays and 4 of them with longs. The other's a boy, he's got a fucking sword. A camera's been rigged up. The little shit's now standing in front of it. Yankee 1's getting dragged out the box. It's getting scary.
Keep straight, not far now.
Kenny checked the mag on his M4. Oh, that's it then, they're gonna have his head. Get your fucking foot down, Jacko lad, or they'll be playing football with it soon.
Give me the net.
All call signs. We're approaching on black. Approaching on black. Change of plan. Bravo 1 is gonna make entry on black. Here we go. Out! Tui picked up his M4 and checked the magazine was on tight as Kenny pulled out the door charge from the day sack at his feet. Contact! Contact! Muzzle flashes came off the target's roof. I just kept going until I was about 20 short and then I hit the brakes. The rest of the team threw open the doors and bomb burst out. Bravo 4 was already putting down covering fire from behind us. I wriggled myself out from behind the steering wheel, grabbed my M4 and I followed. I ran behind the other three, pulling out the collapsible butt of my M4. Fuck the firing above, it didn't matter. No tactics or finesse, just get to the door, blow it in and make entry. The other two entry teams were running to the left and right of us, heading for red and green. Rounds bounced off the concrete around us, making a whizzing noise as they ricocheted back into the air. Kenny reached the door first and banged on 2 door charges. One on the first hinge, a third of the way up, and the other on the second hinge, a third of the way down. As I reached the door, Tui was pulling out a flashbang and pushed me next to the door frame. That made me the first one through the door. Tui thrust the flashbang in front of my face to show me he was ready to back me. Concrete dust was falling down on us as the rounds from Bravo 4 kept all heads down on the roof. After I joined the troop, it had took me a while to work out that it was okay to be scared. Everyone is. Being scared is good. It makes you stop, think, and take action to keep yourself alive. It is fear that makes you leave your cover and run towards the enemy. It's fear that makes you run into a dark room not knowing what's in there waiting for you. Only then the training takes over and you get on with the job. We've practiced these assaults time and time again. The motto of the SAS shouldn't be who dares wins, but check and test. Check and test. I got the weapon into my shoulder, pulled the butt in there tight, safety catch on first click, single shot. One quick press on the torch button to check that everything was ready as Kenny pushed himself against the wall on the other side of the doorframe. Stand by.
The shockwave shuddered through my body as if I'd been slammed against the wall, but I'd no time to recover. Tui threw the flashbang into the building and I followed in. Both eyes open, finger pad on the trigger, butt in the shoulder, torch on, penetrating the darkness. I could feel the concrete dust from the detonation filling my nostrils as the flashbang sent shockwaves around the room. Groping my way to the stairs, I began to move up them, the rest of the team behind me, weapon now pointing up, mouth open, trying to get more air in. There was an explosion on red. I ignored the flashbang that followed and put all my focus on getting up those stairs, using my torchlight to make my way through all the dust and flashbang smoke filling the air. There were shouts from above and then some muzzle flash. We started to take fire. There was no thinking. I kept moving up, double tapping the weapon towards the flash, always moving forwards, always double tapping, making ground towards the roof. There were more screams and firing from above. And then entry was made on green. I kept double tapping, both eyes still focused on the muzzle flash. That's all I could see. My ears ringing with a high-pitched whine after the flashbangs and high-velocity rounds. A body fell down the stairs right in front of me, his AK following. I scrambled over him, heading for the gap above. I could see the stars. On the roof, the X-rays were moving around, their weapons all firing towards our wagons below. One of them turned, long beard, black jacket, and started kicking off a long burst towards me. I stopped, focused on his head, then double-tapped as Tui came up to my left and started firing too. Two more X-rays turned towards us, firing back in a wild frenzy. Tui went down. Fuck! I jumped over him to take aim on the shits as Kenny and Dan got onto the roof and joined in the firefight.
We'll hold it! The Yankee! Get the fucking Yankee!
I turned to see Yankee 1 on his knees.
The boy, no more than 12 years old, standing in front of him. His young eyes were manic and spit flew from his mouth as he cursed down at Yankee One, oblivious to what was going on around him.
I held my breath to keep my body as still as possible. I needed a stable platform for the weapon. This wasn't one to fuck up. I closed my left eye. The boy was maybe 8 meters away. He started to raise the sword with both hands. Yankee One's head was down, accepting death. I focused on the boy's shaved head. My foresight was clear and sharp on the center of his skull. The target was fuzzy. The sight picture was perfect. The boy dropped like liquid. The back of his head was still splattering into the air as he fell on top of Yankee One. Both of them went down. The X-rays were dead and blooding out over the roof. Kenny was firing down onto White from the edge of the roof. More were moving in. Dan was running to join Kenny.
Get him! Get the fucker out!
Pulling the boy off Yankee One, I saw a naked and blood-covered mess. He was tied with his hands behind him and attached to his ankles. His eyes were closed. I pulled out my bayonet and started to cut him free.
Get up! Come on! Let's go!
There was shit on getting downstairs now. We needed to get out of here. He wasn't moving. I kicked him, trying to spark the fucker up.
Get up!
He looked up at me. I couldn't recognize his face. It was so beaten. But I could hear words rasping through a bloody mouth. I can't. My legs, they won't move. He'd been too long in that fucking trunk. I started to drag him towards the roof's doorway, his body unfolding as I pulled. This is Bravo One. Fire mission over. I turned to see Tui looking over at White, his pistol drawn. His weapon was in shit state and his face covered with blood. Thank fuck for that. I dragged Yankee One to the door by his wrists, his ass dragging the X-ray's blood from the roof with us. All call signs were coming down. We are coming down. My M4 bounced on my side on its sling as I staggered under the dead weight, almost carrying him down the stairs. I got down to the ground floor, got out on Black, and dragged him towards the wagon as the first hellfire kicked off above us. The sky lit up for a nanosecond like sheet lightning just before the explosion as I threw Yankee One into the back of our wagon. All call signs were withdrawing now, running past me into their wagons. I jumped into the driver's seat and slammed the door, ready to go. Another burst came out of the darkness towards us at ground level from an alleyway, and Bravo 4 brassed up the muzzle flash with a full mag each as my crew got back into the wagon. I hit the gas and started to turn the wagon around. The lights from the other wagon shone into the cab as it turned. I looked over at Tui's Osprey. He'd taken two rounds into his front plate, and his M4 had taken a round into the stock. The shattered plastic had shot up into his face. Not a pretty sight. Yankee One was between Dan and Kenny, and Dan was trying to get him to talk to make sure he was breathing.
Oi! You're leaking all over the fucking place! Come on, lad! Speak up!
Another hellfire kicked off behind us as Kenny grabbed hold of Yankee One's jaw and pulled his head towards him.
For you, Harry, Zavod is over.
We all started pissing ourselves, and I think even Yankee One managed to smile.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.